And with that, let me see if Franklin has joined us. Franklin, are you with us?
I'm right here.
Well, I'm in San Francisco and you're in Tennessee, which is why I didn't get a great dinner tonight. Anyway, so I want to just remind you that the last precious metals market report, you and I were talking about how remarkable it was that Goldman had predicted that we were going to get a big drop and had invited all their clients to sell or to short, and then the next day nothing happened. And of course, that was Thursday before the Friday and Monday where we had the big drops.
Right, exactly.
So anyway, so bring us up to date. What's happened since we last talked?
Well, on the 12th and the 15th was the biggest two-day drops in the gold market since 1980. And it's hard to say it wasn't a sit-up job. I mean, they threw 400 tons of gold onto the market and the futures market all of a sudden. And, of course, that would break the price. Break it, you know, take it down, and they hit it when it was weak. That is at a support level that had held a long time. So there were bound to be a lot of stop orders right under that support level, which means that as soon as you
now that was 1530 or 1520.
Yeah, 1530. That well, probably 1530.
Right.
Even 1539. And once you hit it, you know, it just breaks and it just feeds on itself. And of course, they were already getting margin calls from the drop on Friday. So Monday was just a disaster. It wasn't clear at the time what it was, whether it was just the first leg of a break or whether that was the exhaustion selling the spike that marks a low. I think now it's gotten plain to me anyway that it was the spike that marks the low. I don't think we're going to see any lower price. We probably will see a move back toward that low that tests it, but that probably will stop at 1400 or 1375. So, you know, it's hard. It's harrowing. It's horrible. It's painful when those things happen, but they happen. And you just have to, you know, you have to go back and check all your premises and say, well, is this still a bull market or not? Does that mark the break of it or what? And that's what I've done. I've got I don't know if your charts are up on the charts are on the website.
Yeah, we have the charts up on the blog, and we also have them in Instant Teleseminar and can run through them if you'd like
okay.
to go through
well,
them.
Here's the most important chart in the gold market, and that's the one I've got labeled chart number one, U.S. $1 paper valued in gold ounces. That runs from January of 1996 till today. And if you see that whole long slide there, the only thing we're talking about, that little bitty teeth right there on the end, that's the whole big thing we're talking about. And
right.
That gives, I think that helps to put into perspective what we've got. Even more than that, the second chart, which shows the value of a dollar in gold ounces from July of 32 till May of 2013, they're just not in question which way that's going. And if you realize this chart that the first chart that I showed you is just the last, what, 10 years, or what's that, 17 years of this chart here. So it's just the tail end of that chart. And you don't, you know, there's no question about what's going on. You don't, you know,
right.
It becomes very, very obvious. But I've more than just asking what the technical outlook for gold is, I think you have to ask, what are the things that drive gold? And what drives gold, of course, is monetary demand. And monetary demand arises from inflation. And the inflation arises from a system that's designed to inflate, a system that has to inflate to survive. And The reason is because it's all in debt. It's all financed by debt. They've replaced production with debt. So this third chart here, America's private debt to GDP ratio, goes back a long ways. It goes back to 1920. And you can see in 1945 that the debt to GDP ratio was about 45 to 1. So what this says is if your income is $100,000 a year, that's your GDP, this compares how much debt you've got to how much you owe. So if your income was $100,000 a year, right now in America, most people owe about $300,000 who have that income. That's what America as a whole owns or owes. So that's not going away anytime soon. In addition to the private debt, you've got which has actually come off some since 2009 when that chart number three comes from. An updated and later chart is this chart number four that shows U.S. debt to GDP. And you can still see, you know, it's up around 2.5 times GDP. U.S. government debt is up approaching about 90% of GDP. And you know, there people read these numbers, come up with different numbers. Some say that U.S. Debt to GDP is over, the government debt to GDP is over 100%. But the point is that you've got a system that is loaded with debt. It's a system that has been living on debt, living beyond its means for years and years and years. And you can't just throw the brakes on that. There's no way. I mean, I think Bernanke's going to have a hard time, or whoever succeeds him. They've created this monster. They've added $3 trillion to the money supply. Now, how do you take it out? I don't think they can. I think you have more confidence than I do in their ability to do that, but they can't take it out any easy way. And finally, there's another problem, and that is that we've got this gigantic tapeworm in the American economy, and that is the financial industry. This chart number six shows GDP is a share of U.S. financial, the GDP share of U.S. financial industry. You go back to 1860, it was about 1.8%. In other words, all of the economic activity, all the income in the United States, only about 1.8% came from the financial industry. Well, last year it was nearly 9%. So the problem here is that so much of this activity is merely parasitical. It's, you know, of the leverage buyout and derivative type.
And we've seen the most recent earning reports from a whole series of the big banks showing, you know, only a few or no trading days in the entire first quarter when they had a loss. How can that be?
Well, there's a good question. they function because that activity is parasitical. It doesn't produce anything. They function as a drag on the economy.
Right.
They drag the economy down. And their shares, I don't have a chart to show it, but the financial industry share of corporate profits last year was about 30%. In other words, one out of every $3 that corporations made in the United States went to financial industry corporations. That's crazy. That's just
right.
Nuts.
Right.
So for all those reasons, they've got to keep inflating. It's in the interest of the people who control the government, which is the financial elite, to continue to inflate, and they ain't going to stop. Just to put it real in a real crude country way, they ain't going to stop because there's no reason for them to stop. So having said that, would you like to look at a few gold charts?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I went and got a monthly chart, gold chart for 13 years. And it's a very interesting chart because what it shows is that the drop that we saw on the 12th and 15th of April barely brought the gold market, barely corrected the gold market back to the uptrend line. So what that says is that is a healthy market. That market is not in trouble. When we pick a monthly chart as opposed to a daily chart, What it means is that we're filtering out a lot of data. We're filtering out the noise. It's just like tuning out the static on your radio so that we get an idea of what the genuine trend is. And there it is, right there. You know, the uptrend is perfectly intact. I've got the same kind of chart, a monthly chart for silver, and you can see it's pretty much the same picture. It just comes back to trend line. And in fact, 2008 was worse in terms of the drop, or looks worse in terms of the drop through the trend line. It was a lot worse than this one that we've just experienced. So when you look at those monthly charts, which again give you a longer term, less staticky vision, a view of the market, I don't see any problems. You know, there's no question the bull market's still going on. Then that brings us up to today, and today things are not quite so clear. You know, you're always, it's very easy to see from the top of the mountain what the lay of the land is. It's not so easy when you're hacking your way through the jungle. And if we come down to the jungle, which would be the chart, the daily chart for gold, you can see that gold has very credibly recovered from that bottom. But every time it gets up to about 1485, there are all these people there waiting to sell more gold. And it was in a little uptrend, but it's kind of broken down out of that uptrend. So I don't know. I expect to see one more test of that low before we have a bottom. And that can take place anytime between now and the first part of July. Probably June at the latest, but it's possible that it could take place this month too. May and June are often seasonally months that gold and silver tend to make a bottom in. So we might see it any time, but there's the problem is there was a lot of damage done in that fall, a lot of damage. You know, people talk about technical damage. What do they mean? Well, morale has been damaged. There are a lot of people who were shaken out, and this happens periodically, that you have these shakeouts in markets so that all of those people who are what we call weak hands, that is, they're not really very sure whether they're going to stay in for the long term or not, they have to be shaken out. So that's happened. But now it will take a while for new buyers to come in, to become brave enough to come in. So we have to
repair. Well, I think also the divergence between commodities and commodities in the equities markets has been particularly, has made it particularly painful. Because for a long time, you know, the Fed would print and both would go up together. And this time that didn't happen. Over the last 9 months, they've diverged tremendously.
Well, you had big drops in other commodities across the board on the 12th and the 15th. So there's been trouble in all commodities. Yeah. And the bigger question to me is the market telling us something else? Is the market pointing to some bigger crisis that's coming? I don't know what that would be, but there are loads of financial crises in the closets of the world that are waiting to fall out and clatter onto the floor. So that certainly is a possibility. But
before we bring Stuart in, can I just ask you, Franklin, the reports I've been getting have been that the physical market, you know, one of the things that's happening with lower prices, you're getting tremendously broad-based retail buying globally. So we have a lot more individual investors coming in and buying gold and silver.
Well, that's true in the retail world, but I'm not sure how much it's true in the, you know, in the big world, because the big world is where they sell 400-ounce bars of gold. The retail mm-hmm. world is fairly thin. That's the world that I move in, and it's fairly thin. And the supply pipeline is never very full, and it doesn't take much to empty it out. The supply pipeline in retail items for silver is way empty. I mean, it just emptied out immediately and has been empty for a while. For gold, not as much, but some things, it's been more that certain things have disappeared, like small gold coins. They just vanished. And this has been going on since last November, really. And in silver, the 90% coin has carried a premium in the last week or two of $5 an ounce over spot. So all those prices went up because they have to be not the 90%, but other things like 100-ounce bars or 1-ounce rounds. All that stuff has to be manufactured. And as I said, it's a pretty thin pipeline. And when you get a supply shock, when you get a price shock like the one we saw, you've got all these bargain hunters that come in and they say, oh, I want to buy some more because I remember when I bought some down here before and it really did well. And so that's what you've got happening. But I don't know about the big world of, you know, 400-ounce bars.
Right.
However, I will say this. If something like 475 tons could flow out of GLD in just a few days, why can't the U.S. government repay the German gold, the 300 tons they owe Germany, in less than 7 years, which is how long they say, they've said it would take to replace it. So, you know, that just sounds like to me that there's not as much gold around as people think there is. And it's really hard to get a handle on that because of the, you know, the paper market really is the dog that wags the, is the tail that wags the dog of the gold world. And that was where the gold price was crashed, was in the paper market. It wasn't all of a sudden somebody said, hey, let's take these 400 tons of 400-ounce gold bars down to the corner and sell them. That didn't happen. It was somebody selling paper contracts.
We have a ton of questions, but what I thought I'd do is I would bring Stuart in now, and then let's handle the questions after we have a chance to involve Stuart in the conversation, okay?
Sure.
Okay. My two favorite sort of ways of covering the precious metals market is to read Franklin Sanders' Money Changer, which if you haven't recommended, I strongly recommend. And another is I'm a subscriber to Graceland Updates, which Stuart Thompson writes. Stuart is a former broker who is a master at describing the sort of short-term trading tactics. And he looks at the world very much from the world of the economic warfare, which is one of the reasons that I love his. People are known to laugh until they cry as Stuart talks about the different tactics of the chimps and the banksters in the precious metals market. But Stuart is the proprietor of Graceland Investment Management and then publishes the Graceland Updates, and he hails from Toronto. So, Stuart, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, Catherine. Great to be here.
Okay, well, you've been hearing our discussion, so what I would love for you to do is share with Franklin and me sort of your view of the last month and your perspective of what's ahead.
Well, I guess different analysts have different views and things, and I sort of approach the market from, sort of like a value buyer a bit, also like a predator. And I look at markets in certain levels. So, for example, I look at the Dow, or at least I did look at the Dow in 1,000-point increments. So when the Dow was trading in 2007, up at 14,000 in that area, and then it began to fall down. And you had mentioned like the weak hands and the strong hands. I think even people that sort of think everybody thinks you're strong hands until you're sort of, you know, taken to the woodshed, and it happens to everybody in their lives and in the market. And I kind of call that your personal surprise zone, as you've got your analysis laid out.
Uh-huh.
And then the price comes down and just blows your analysis away. And that's really where I do most of my buying is ironically is where I'm most wrong about the market. But there are these big support areas in there, and I've already set aside capital to buy. So, for example, in 2008, although that wasn't so fun because I thought the financial system was going to shut down. So basically, at the lows of 2008, I focused on Dow stocks and mainly GE and Alcoa. But at the same time, every couple of days, I was going to the bank, pulling money out of the bank because I really thought that I thought Alcoa might survive, but General Electric was loaded with derivatives, and I think right at the lows, we were basically 24 hours from the whole system shutting down. Now, it didn't shut down, and then everything turned around and started going up again. But that's kind of how I approach the market, and most markets get into that kind of situation, and we just saw that with the gold crash. And so I kind of approach the market from the gold market, at least from the point of view that the banks are not short gold but long gold. But within that, they're playing these different games. And I believe the physical market does determine the overall price of the metal. And I think the banks run that market, and they run the paper market. And they want gold higher. I mean, just like the rest of us as investors, you see all this debt, and the only way out of the debt is to devalue the paper money. It's essentially unpayable. But unfortunately, it's not like, say, a market like a 1980, which is more of a demand-related market, a speculative market in the metals, and that's why silver did so well then, and it's struggling now, which is more, this is more like the 1930s. And so within the smaller picture, you have what I believe is the banks have algo programs, just like the funds do, except the banks have better algo programs that actually sculpt chart patterns onto the short-term charts. And I think today was an example where you saw this gold was doing very well. GDX, Barrick, the largest gold company, had both had staged breakouts that were real. There was volume there. But if you look at like a 5-minute chart of the bullion price, there was, which I believe the banks sculpt right on there with their, basically with buy and sell orders. They're actually sculpting a chart pattern onto the chart. And this head and shoulders top pattern began to appear. And right as price was up at the right shoulder, what do we know that the Fed president, the Philly Fed, Charles Plosser, who I nicknamed Charles Plopper, Gold Plopper, comes out and says, oh, wait, the QE exit, well, we don't know how we're going to get out of this. Oh, no, in other words, sell all your gold. So right away then the banks come in and say to the funds, look, the guys out there saying QE is a big problem. You got to sell. You got to go short. Well, the banks are already short. And my chart showed about 40,000 COMEX contracts changing hands in about 5 minutes, a couple of hours before he came out and talked. But then that all disappeared off the chart. So maybe my charts were wrong, but I've seen this before where there's trades, you know, even $50 below the price, but they never get printed onto the chart. And I don't think that, I think they took that volume away. And so as soon as he talked, the right shoulder was gone, and all the technicians are now shorting the gold, which enables the banks to cover off. And where we are now is sort of now that whole head and shoulders pattern, maybe ahead of a bigger one, which would allow them to sort of target down at 1440. And what ends up happening is when these reports come out or these people talk, you end up having the banks are the ones that make all the money. And whether gold is in a rising market or in a falling market, within that, the short-term trend, the banks seem to just vacuum this up. So for most investors, it's pretty hard to be, they just don't have the time to be staring into the chart. And even if you can stare, you know, most really good technicians will, you know, at best break even in the market. So my advice is to stay focused on the much bigger picture, but you need a lot of patience. Now, just to go over this gold crash, ironically, there's these big areas where you want to buy. For example, in gold, you know, I've talked about being a buyer as gold came down at 1577, in that area, 1577, 1432, 1266. Those are three key numbers to be buyers at if the price goes there. And we don't know that it's going there. And in the case of gold, it just meandered around and meandered around. And then within, you basically waited from August, September of 2011 for almost 2 years, a year and a half. And then you had 2 days to get in there and buy at 1432. And now it went down below that. So I buy using what I've built, this thing called a pyramid generator, which basically generates a pyramid formation of buys. So your buys are getting bigger in that particular area. But those are, you don't really, most investors are acting sort of on their analysis. Well, gold looks good and they're printing all this money. Well, you know, maybe they can print $100 trillion in U.S. dollars before you create hyperinflation. It is the reserve currency of the world. So I think it's important for the average investor to focus on these bigger areas where the banks themselves will come in and buy, and yet don't try to buy it all right there. And just be very, you need a lot of patience.
You need a lot of patience.
Yeah, you only have a brief period of time to get in there. Ironically, after all that patience, if you missed that 2 day period, well, gold's already bounced back up. So that
I want to tie what Franklin was saying. Franklin was talking about the extent to which the financial system has become parasitical in terms of the amount of activity. You know, we have a financial sector which has far more capacity and is taking a much bigger part of profits total than is really needed for an economy. And I said something about the fact that in the first quarter reports, we have lots of the big banks reporting that, you know, essentially every trading day was a profitable day. I used to have a partner in Wall Street who would say, "Why am I so lucky?" And the reality is we've got an entire financial sector that is not making markets so much as engaging in predatory activities that harvest everybody else. And one of the reasons that I so enjoy Graceland updates is you're really focusing on those tactics. You're really writing a lot about, you know, sort of the games the banksters play, and how the investor can avoid getting trapped in those games. And I think that's what you're saying now. You've got to stick, it's what Franklin says, we've got to stick with a primary trend and keep the long view.
Yes, exactly. Because you're dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with the bank, the real bank traders at the highest level, not just the fund managers in the bank or the analysts, but the traders that are moving the real money for the banks, moving money for governments, they can get money if they're low on liquidity. They can go to the Fed for funds. I mean, the average investor doesn't have a printing press. And I'm a pretty good technical analyst. I've read Edwards and McGee many times and parts of it hundreds of times. But the skill level of their teams of analysts is phenomenal. But they don't stop there. No matter how good they are, they'll still cheat, lie, steal, do anything to win. And when you're up against, you know, people that have the power to use news conferences, economic reports, and literally, you know, sculpt a bearish or bullish pattern on the chart for their own benefit, you really have to kind of simplify your approach to the market, or you'd just be washed away if you sort of just follow. Like right now, the banks are just pumping out the bearish, you know, the bearish targets for gold. So you have to be aware that it could go down there, And it, you know, if it does, you really have to be able to, you know, first endure your holdings if you're committed to the view that gold is going much higher, which I am. And second, hopefully be able to buy something. You don't have to buy zillions of ounces. And that's really where people get caught. You sort of get into a viewpoint that the market just, you sort of, you've got to imagine your worst case scenario and then prepare to buy there. And because at some point the market is going to go into that scenario, and that's where everyone else is washed away. And if you're able to get something on the table there, when it returns, I call that the out of the hole move. Some Dow stocks were up hundreds and hundreds of percent in just 6 months out of the 2008 lows. And, you know, now the mainstream's talking about the market. Well, even if the Dow were to go to 20,000 from here, which is 5,000-point move, it's 30-odd percent, you'd never come close to the kind of returns that the banks made out of the hole there in just right. A very short period of time. What they made in 6 months, I mean, the Dow would have to go to literally 70 grand from here for the average investor to see those kind of returns. Now, it may well go to 70 grand, but it's not going to go there in 6 months. So
right.
Again,
so go
ahead.
So question for both of you. If you're an investor and you don't have your core gold position, or you have it but you want to buy more, we're coming into the summer now, which is traditionally a soft time. Do you buy now, or do you wait and see if we take another step down before you buy? What do you do?
Well, I've used the term first. You know, I have a sort of a rough rule of three strikes and you're out. But just it's very important to buy when you're most afraid. So that's where that's out of the hole. See, as we came down to 1320, you didn't really know exactly where the buy zone I had was 1432 down to 1309. Well, it bottomed at 1320. But you've got to sort of look in the mirror at how you feel as it's going down there. You may plan to buy in advance, and then, you know, when the news is just pummeling in, we're going to 500, it's all over, and this is what's being, you know, I talked about this when we were up at higher prices, that when the price goes down, when price is moving up and people say, well, I'll buy the correction, what they don't realize is that the banks are able to change the news dramatically. So that no longer are you surrounded with bullish news, but you're and not just mildly like correction news. You're surrounded with the cycle is all over. You're finished if you buy.
Yeah, the terror news.
So, I think you want to get. You've got to sort of face that you're in a fight, and you want to get that gold at that price the first time, because most people are most afraid. So you're most likely to be in there with the least amount of people and the strongest hands, meaning you're there with the banks buying, and you saw the bounce from 1320 up to 1480-ish, which was a nice bounce. And it doesn't mean you have to, you know, sell there. You're not going to get all your buys down in the bottom, obviously, but you've got something in a decent area. And then what happens, then the analysis starts. So you've had the first bounce. So if we go back down there again, now people are now analyzing why it's, you know, the bottom will hold and this and that. Well, each time you go down and test there, the whole thing is weakening. So you want to apply the most capital on the first touching of these, you know, terrifying support zones.
Franklin, what would you be a buyer here, or would you wait?
No, I really wouldn't be inclined to buy here because, you know, after what we've seen, I think it's just too typical that a market, after as much damage as has been done to it, goes back and retests that low. It doesn't mean they go back down to that low, but it moves in that direction, and I want to see how it behaves down there. Because I'm not, you know, I don't think it's going to go lower than it already has been, but I want to see how it behaves when it's down there.
Right. Maybe okay, we got a ton of questions. Oh, go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah, I think There's a role for cheerleading, especially for gold investors, people that sort of just believe in, you know, it's sort of us against the government, if you will. I mean, that's the, I'm a Canadian, but whether you fall back on the ancient Greeks or the Romans or the American Constitution, if you're you know, a believer that part of the duty as the citizen is to keep government small, and gold has a role to play in that. And I think wherever you are in the gold market, you want to cheer for your team. So you want it, when there's a bullish scenario on a chart or a bullish, you know, analysis scenario, you want to really cheer that team wins. You want to sort of stay in that kind of mindset, that rather than sort of caving in, that I'm you know, I'm a loser and I'm headed down and maybe I'm not in the right. And once you get into that mindset, it's tough to get out of it. And then you start, your decision-making process starts to get weak. So I think it's definitely a tough time for gold investors. They've been, you know, shocked. But you want to look at the positive side of things, like, we're surrounded with hundreds of millions of Asians. You know, basically, what I've called it is you know, thumbing their nose to the government. That's why they're buying gold.
Right.
Where was the Chinese government buying, you know, supporting gold on the, you know, the big gold sale? Well, the people in the street were out there buying, and so we've got a lot of friends in the gold community all around the world, in India, China. Japan storming into, you know, to support gold and
support. Oh, I would say we have hundreds of millions, if not billions, of friends around the world.
Yes. So we're, but the way the media paints it out, we're sort of this little isolated gold community of weirdos. And I think, you know, I just personally like to see the gold community on the aggressive. And it seems like a lot of times when the mainstream people, it's gold people. I don't think you should really defend ourselves against. Again, I think we should be the ones sort of controlling the argument, if you will. There's nothing for us to really to defend about gold. It's more the you want to take the paper people onto the defensive. You know, why do you embrace paper?
You know, that's a very good idea, because there's so many stories, there's so many great retail stories that talks about the gold, the role that gold plays. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard anybody tell the story of how they got out of Nazi Germany because they had the coins in the backyard. But you hear those stories and you realize, oh my God, you know, having a store of value that is out, you know, that is not in any, you know, I can put in my pocket and just walk away and it's recognized anywhere in the world. You know, there's so many great
stories.
There's
nothing like that anywhere else. I mean,
right.
Even silver's like it, but I mean, you know, you put a 1,000-ounce bar in your pocket, it's, you know, 7-8 pounds. If you're awake,
although
there,
if you wanted to buy a gallon of milk with gold, it would be tough.
Yeah.
Listen, we got hundreds of questions, so, or many, many questions. So let me just start on the questions.
Oh, sure.